Okay, Janine mumbled, allowing Bree to lead her to a kitchen stool. Bree squeezed her arm, then went to retrieve the laptop and the photo. Janine leaned back in her chair, closing her eyes and willing her heart to slow. She wasn't sure she wanted to see the photo. Wait, she'd completely forgotten about the photo she'd taken at the park. She stood and fumbled in her pocket for it. It had come out well. She'd taken it from inside the car, facing the tree she and Bree had been sitting under, about 20 feet away. A couple of the picnicking families were visible at the edges of the picture, fishing food out of their baskets and playing with their toddlers. The ocean was mostly hidden by the thick bushes that grew along the park's fence. Two spirits were present in the picture. A boy peered out from behind the trees Janine and Bree had eaten under. He was watching the camera but seemed to be trying to hide. The second spirit was a tall, gaunt man walking towards the car. He looked as though he belonged on a farm, where they pumped water out of the well every morning and waited for the weekly mail delivery to hear about the life outside their secluded world. He held an axe in one hand. Its handle was long and its blade looked wickedly sharp. He'd been taking long strides towards the car when Janine photographed him, and the skin around his bleached eyeballs was creased in a scowl. A stain on his overalls, large and dark, splattered up from his waist across his shoulder, leaving flecks of dark liquid on his cheek. Janine slapped the picture upside down on the counter. She could feel her heart thundering in her ears as she rubbed her sweaty hands together. Feeling any better? Bree slipped into the seat opposite. She'd brought the Polaroid she'd taken, but placed it face down. Out of Janine's reach. Of course, Janine lied. She waved a hand at the picture. Did you look at it?
Yeah.
Is something there?
Yeah.
Can I?
Nope.
Bree's tone rejected argument. Not when you're this stressed, at least. It'll only make things worse. Janine leaned her arms on the table and cradled her head in them. Her heart was slowing, but the tightness in her chest wouldn't relent. This sucks.
It sure does.
Janine jumped as someone rapped on the door. She froze, wide-eyed, trying to imagine who would be visiting her at 6 p.m. on a Sunday. Then she remembered Richard Holt.
I'll get it,
Bree said, disappearing from the kitchen. Janine thought of the camera and jumped up. Bree had left it on the coffee table, so she stashed it back in the drawer as Bree opened the front door. Mr. Holt?
Yes, hello.
The man's voice was tense, tight.
May I come in?
Flustered, Janine sat on the lounge and tried to smooth her hair back as Bree led an older man into her living room. In his black slacks, cardigan, and glasses, he looked like an old-fashioned British professor. His face was developing wrinkles but seemed mild and gentle. He rubbed at his pants as he sat.
Thank you.
I'm Briannon, Bree introduced them. And this is Janine. Apparently you're some sort of expert on ghost stuff.
Ghost stuff.
He chuckled, but it was a hollow sound.
Yes, I am considered an authority. I've worked on a few cases that made it to the news. Which one of you found the camera?
Janine raised her hand. At a wedding. It had been left in a lighthouse.
I see. Have both of you taken photos with it, or...
Both, Bree said. But Jenny more than me. Why?
May I see the photos?
Bree glanced at Janine, who nodded. Bree fetched the pictures from the kitchen table and handed them to Richard. He placed each picture on the coffee table after glancing at it, then pushed the pile towards Bree when he was finished, almost as if he didn't want to touch them.
You have what I like to call a ghost camera.
Richard sighed.
It's the third one I have come across in my career.
Janine sat forward on her chair. Really? But I've never heard of them before. If they're as common as that, why aren't they publicized, tested, displayed in museums?
They have a rather dark history, I'm afraid,
Richard said. He crossed his legs and placed both hands on the top knee, a pose that was simultaneously relaxed and guarded.
People who know about them tend not to discuss them. I suppose you would call it bad luck.
That's crazy, Bree said, gesturing towards the pictures. We have certifiable, reproducible proof of ghosts. Why wouldn't people be interested in it? Richard wet his lips and inhaled deeply, as though he wished he could avoid continuing.
The ghost camera has unique properties. Not only does it make the spirit world visible to us, but it makes us mortals visible to them.
Janine glanced at the pictures. More than half of the ghosts were looking directly at the camera.
Normally, the spirit world and the mortal world are intangible to each other, Richard continued.
He held one palm out flat and laid his other on top to illustrate his point.
We share the same space. We cohabitate without realizing it. Like light and air. Two substances can take up the same space without having any effect on each other. Well, barely any effect anyway.
Janine glanced at Bree. She no longer looked accusatory, but fascinated. Richard's natural charisma commanded the attention of the room. Definitely an ex-uni lecturer, Janine thought.
When I say light and air don't interact, that's not strictly true. Light can warm the air, and air can slow the process of light. That's similar to the human realm and the ghost realm. The vast majority of the time, they're intangible to each other. But there will be little instances, micro-events, that you may not even be aware of, where they influence our world. You might wake up in the middle of the night and not know why. Perhaps small items move when you're not in the room. Never by much, just a few centimeters at a time, that you don't realize. Or your pets will stare intently at a wall, just an empty wall, as though they can see something you can't.
As if on cue, the largest of Janine's cats leapt into the lounge. Janine reached out to rub its head, kneading the thin skin over its skull.
Imagine two pieces of paper, one sitting on top of the other. This is a flawed analogy, mind, but please bear with me.
Richard shifted forward in his seat, the natural excitement to teach burning through his initial reluctance.
Those pieces of paper are close, very close, so that when you look at them they might appear as one, yet they're separate. You can slide them, move them, divide them. Now imagine that a single drop of water falls onto the top page. It seeps through to the second page, binding them together. Yes, they can still be peeled apart, but not as easily. It almost, not quite, but almost, fuses them together. That can happen in life sometimes. The spirit world will, in patches, sink with the earth and allow ghosts to interact with us. Of course, the drop of water dries quickly. It may take a few hours or even a day or two, but it will dry, and the pages will separate again.
Bree was scowling, but her eyes were fiery. You're saying that's what happens with the ghost camera?
I'm getting to that. Keeping with my analogy, everyday paranormal events are light sprinklings of water. Sometimes a location can be tainted when a life that passes over is so troubled that it drips water on the paper, so to speak, and creates a haunted location that, depending on the strength, can last for decades. These are your classic haunted houses,
he sighed.
What you found, the ghost camera, is like a glass of water that tips onto the paper every time you take a picture.
Janine drew her cat into her lap and massaged along its back. It purred in response, a comforting, safe sound. The enthusiasm was dying out of Richard's voice. He was sounding and looking older, as though the enjoyable part of his lecture was over.
Each additional photo dampens the paper further, breaks down the fiber, makes it harder to separate. I apologize. I've carried this euphemism much too far, haven't I? Essentially, from what I've been able to deduce, the ghost camera makes the user visible to spirits. It marks you. Not just temporarily, like water on paper, but permanently. The more photos you take, the easier it is for them to find you.
Shivers snaked up Janine's back. She petted her cat more vigorously, desperate for the warmth and comfort between her fingers. Bree was at the edge of her seat.
Okay, why is that bad? What happens when they find you?
Richard opened his mouth and closed it. He swallowed and glanced around the room, looking everywhere except at the two friends.
They kill you, he admitted.
What the hell?
Bree stood up, towering over the sitting man.
Bull, you're lying!
He continued in a rush, as though she hadn't spoken.
That's why you have to destroy the camera. Don't show it to anyone. Don't give it to anyone. Destroy it. That's the only way to stop others from being tainted with its curse.
Janine felt as if her world were collapsing. She didn't realize she was squeezing her cat until it bit her hand and scurried off with a hiss.
You can stop it, though.
Yeah?
Pacing the room, Bree pointed one finger at Richard, but refused to look at him.
You said you found two cameras before, right? You know how to beat it.
Richard sucked air in through his nose. His voice wavered as he stumbled over his words.
The first person came to me 2 days before his death. We destroyed the camera, and I thought that would be enough to stop it. But he still died. Official diagnosis was a heart attack. The police found him hiding in the cupboards under his sink.
Bull! Bree repeated, seemingly unable to stay still. Janine's hands felt empty without the cat, so she picked up a cushion instead.
When the second victim came to me, I tried everything within my power to free her, and I mean everything.
Richard's face was drawn. Beads of sweat had developed on his forehead and cheeks.
Bathing in holy water, exorcisms, expulsions, blessings by Romanian white witches, we burnt sage everywhere. We tried to hide inside churches, in rural areas, anywhere. We did experiments on the camera and tried to communicate with the ghosts. And I called every expert I thought might be able to help. Only three were aware of ghost cameras. And none knew of any cure. She died as well.
So... Bree's panic was visible on her face and her voice was tight and high. She stopped pacing. What do we do?
Richard finally met her eyes. His were sad and resigned. Depending on how many photos you've taken, you may still have a few days or a few weeks. Maybe as much as a month. If you only took one picture, you'll know it's near the end when you feel them touch you.
Janine's fingers fluttered to the part of her neck crusted with dried blood. Richard continued.
At that point, I would suggest taking a few sleeping pills.
Bree looked from Janine to Richard. She had her arms folded, fists balled under her armpits, and her eyes were huge. Will that help?
No. But you won't be awake for the end.
Both Janine and Richard jumped as Bree's anger exploded out of her like water rushing through a broken dam. You're lying! Bree threw herself at Richard and grasped the front of his cardigan in her fists. No! Janine yelled. Bree shook him hard, as though he might change his story with enough coercion. Janine grasped Bree around the waist and tried to haul her back. For a second, she thought Bree might really hurt the man. But then she relaxed, released her hold, and let Janine draw her back. Bree's face was as white as a sheet, and her cheeks were wet. She stared at Janine for a second, then looked back at the professor.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry, she said. I didn't mean, I'm so sorry.
Richard adjusted his cardigan and smoothed back his gray hair, which had come loose from its careful comb-over. His lips were tight and pale, but his voice was even when he answered.
It's all right. I understand. It's difficult news to receive. And I certainly don't like giving it.
There's got to be something you can do, Janine said. She sat next to Bree and wrapped an arm around her friend's shoulders. She could feel them trembling. She wasn't sure if fear or anger was the cause, but Bree remained mute.
I wish there was. I truly, truly do. But I didn't lie when I said I tried everything. I had an entire week with the last case, and when we weren't trying new methods of breaking the curse, I was researching. Ghost cameras aren't a new phenomenon. I found evidence of them as far back as the early 1900s. They become rare with the invention of digital cameras, for whatever reason. Ghost cameras are only analog. But they still pop up every now and then. Every single case of a person using the camera to take a photo has resulted in death. The more photos they took, the sooner and more violent their deaths were.
Bree shuddered and leaned forward to rest her head in Janine's lap. She grasped Janine's hands in hers and squeezed them tightly, rubbing the palms with her fingers. Janine squeezed back. Richard looked at them, and his mouth tightened. He looked as though he were on the verge of crying, but he maintained a steady voice when he spoke.
You took a large number of pictures. I'd strongly recommend the sleeping pills when they start to touch you. You don't want to see what happens after that.
He stood and turned towards the door. Bree raised her head and glared at him with red-rimmed eyes. That's it? You're just going to leave us to it? He hesitated in the doorway, shoulders hunched and eyes on the floor.
I wish I could help, he repeated.
No, there's got to be a way to beat this. He turned back to them, emotion struggling over his face.
Look, I'm sorry. I really, really am sorry. You seem like nice people. I wish to hell this hadn't happened to you. But I can't help you any more than I can help someone with an incurable disease. Goodbye.
The door slammed as he left and Janine's legs gave out. She flopped onto the carpet and hugged her knees to her chest. Bree sat down next to her and placed her arm around Janine's shoulders.
I don't want to die,
Janine said stupidly. Oh, babe. Neither of them seemed to have anything else to say. So they huddled and shivered together as thunder crackled in the distance. A single raindrop tapped the roof, then a second and a third,
and soon the sound of single drops blended together into the steady drum of rain.
Chapter 5. Janine very rarely saw her best friend vulnerable, frightened, or without answers. Bree was a perpetual achiever. Obstacles only existed for her to knock over. Seeing Bree look so helpless and alone was a new experience for Janine. But there it was, proof that Bree Abernacle was human. As she sat on the floor with her arms around Bree, Janine tried to come to terms with her new knowledge. She was going to die, not in 50 years, when she was old and had lived a full life, but in the immediate future. She tried to take stock of her emotions, and found they were missing. She felt numb, as if she were watching herself act in a movie. The professor-looking man had strolled into her life, told her she was a dead woman walking, then strolled out, leaving her to shrug at the camera. It wasn't real. It couldn't possibly be real. Bree seemed to be dealing with the news in a very different way. She rocked on the floor, gripping Janine's arm, her eyes dull as she stared at the floor. She looked sick. Bree? She shook her head and pulled herself out of Janine's arms. She stood up, stumbled, then walked to her bag in the corner of the room and pulled out her mobile. Janine stood up, uncertain what she should say or do. Bree disappeared into the bedroom. When she came out 2 minutes later, her face was all hard angles and covered in a sheen of sweat. She dropped the phone into her bag and leaned her hands on the kitchen counter, breathing deeply through her nose. Janine approached Bree from behind and placed a hand on her shoulder. Bree turned, offered a watery smile, and said, "He didn't answer." "Oh, I'm sorry." Janine wanted to smack herself as soon as the words left her mouth. Of all the things she could have said to someone who just found out she was about to die, "I'm sorry" had to be the most useless and insipid choice. Bree scrunched up her face and pulled Janine into a hug. "Don't be, not your fault, anyway." She pulled back. "We're not done yet. Holt doesn't want to help us, but that doesn't mean there's nothing to do." Just like that, active Bree was back. "Here's the plan," she said, turning on the kettle and picking up the laptop in one deft sweep. "We're going to get a cup of tea. We're going to do 5 minutes of meditation. Then we're going to find a solution to this. So what if we don't have help from the expert? There's got to be a way to beat this, and we'll figure out what it is. I promise." Janine nodded, mostly just relieved to let Bree take over. Janine and Bree sat down next to each other at the coffee table. Bree was researching the cameras. Janine guessed it wasn't going so well, based on the quiet grumbles and hisses of frustration. Bree had given Janine the job of examining the photographs and noting down anything significant or unusual. Bree reasoned that Janine had a better eye for detail, but Janine suspected her friend's motives were more self-centered. Bree always floundered when she felt out of control. And right then, control for Bree meant being in charge of the research. Janine didn't mind. She wouldn't know where to look if it had been left up to her. The photos, though unsettling, were at least familiar. She'd gathered every picture she could find. They had taken 9, and laid them out in front of her in chronological order, starting with the picture of the wedding reception. She counted 28 ghosts in total. She rubbed her hand across her face and suddenly realized she was missing one of the pictures. "Hey, Bree, where's the photo you took earlier today?" "There." Without looking up from the computer, Bree pointed to the Polaroid on the kitchen counter. Janine fetched it and took a long look. Her own face took up a lot of the picture, pale, frightened, wide-eyed. A ghostly hand grasped at her shoulder. The hand belonged to an impossibly tall man, so horribly bony that he reminded Janine of a prisoner of war who had been starved. His mouth was open, and every visible tooth had been sharpened to a fine point. She grimaced and placed it in the correct spot at the end of the list. "You've got this," she told herself. "Think of it as a law school assignment. Find the evidence. That's what your professors are always saying. Evidence is everywhere. It's just got to be found." The first thing she thought might be significant was the ghost's attention. In the first picture, none of the ghosts were looking at the camera. In the second picture, the one taken in the floristry, the single ghost was staring at the back of Janine's head, not at the camera. Out of the pictures taken in her home, the ghosts only seemed to start paying attention to her partway through the series. The turning point was the set of photos taken in her bedroom. At first, the ghost hadn't acknowledged her presence, but in the second photo, all three of them were watching her intently. After that, every single ghost was either looking at or trying to approach her or the camera. That matched what Richard Holt had said. The more photos she took, the easier the ghosts could find her. Then she noticed the recurring ghosts. In the photo she'd taken from inside the car, the ghost, the woman who had left finger smudges on the window, looked remarkably similar to one of the women in the wedding photograph. This raised several interesting questions. How did ghosts travel? Did they just walk or did they teleport? Maybe if I keep running, keep moving, they won't catch me? For a second, she thought she felt a cold breath drift across the back of her neck. She swiped her hand over the area, but couldn't feel anything. Bree glanced at her, a silent question creasing her eyes, and Janine smiled reassuringly. She turned back to the pictures. She found a second instance of duplicate ghost quickly. A man at the wedding appeared later at the park. The second ghost in the park photograph was also familiar. A child stood behind the tree, his empty white eyes wide and his hair tossed about his head. Janine picked up the wedding photo to compare and was vindicated to see it was the same boy who had been crouched behind the tree at the park. At first she didn't see any other duplicates, but then she came across a third instance of the boy in the photo taken in the floristry. Half of his face was visible outside the window. Intrigued, she searched for him in the other pictures, and her skin began to crawl. The boy appeared in 8 of the 10 photos. Never featured prominently, he was almost always hiding or peeking around a large object or through a window. He was unmistakable, though. Wide, hollow eyes beneath thin hair being blown by non-existent wind watched the camera in every single photo. Janine was simultaneously repulsed and heartbroken. "Why is he following me? And why does he hide?" Janine picked up the wedding photo again. She'd wondered if he might be the owner of the camera, hoping to reclaim something he'd lost. "Jackpot," Bree whispered. Janine put aside the photos and scooted close enough to look over her friend's shoulder. "Check this out. Among the droves of fiction, photoshopped pictures, hoaxes, games, and irrelevant crap, there's a forum thread that matches our camera perfectly." Bree had found a paranormal forum. Janine skimmed the first post, which was from 2008. The author described a situation similar to Janine's. He'd found a camera abandoned in the attic of a house he'd inherited and had taken some pictures. He'd attached them to the post, and Janine suppressed a shudder. They were eerily similar to the pictures she'd taken. Pale figures stared at the camera with empty eyes, some reaching out. One appeared to have a rope around her neck. The replies varied from curious to downright incredulous. Janine supposed that was to be expected. The fifth post took it more seriously, though. "An old colleague of mine used to talk about photos like this," it read. "He called them death pictures. He collected them as a hobby." Janine scanned the rest of the post, but it focused on analyzing the pictures and coming up with theories about the ghost's former lives. A few others continued the conversation for about a week, but the original poster never replied. The thread picked up 4 years later, with a post by a girl who called herself Becca. "Hello, sorry to revive an old thread, but it's very relevant to my situation. I bought a lovely vintage camera from a garage sale, previous owners deceased, and it shows ghosts in both of the pictures I developed. It's freaking me out. Is there anyone I should be contacting about this? One of the pictures was taken inside my home, and there are these white, ghostly people everywhere. Would a medium help?" A reply had been left the next day. "Hi, full disclosure here, I know nothing about the paranormal. A friend sent me the link to your post, thinking I might be able to help. I'm a professional photographer with 30 years of experience. I've heard plenty of wild tales in my time, and that includes stories about ghost cameras, or death cameras, as some call them. They're not only meant to show ghosts, but supposedly the user always dies shortly after taking them. Personally, I think it's an entertaining story, but ultimately just that, fiction. If such a thing really existed, it would be all over the news." The post after that said, "Unless there's an industry-wide cover-up, the conspiracy theorist in me is going wild, LOL." Becca replied soon after. Thanks for the industry advice. It's pretty hard to discard it as fiction when I'm staring at pictures of dead people, though. Should I not take any more pictures? Is there anyone I can get in touch with about this? I've been searching the internet, and I'm desperate for help. Shortly after, there was a new post from a user called RH Paranormal. Hi, Becca. I may be able to help. I've extensively studied the area of possessed items, and I've had contact with one person previously who had used a ghost camera. Where do you live? Don't use the camera again, but call me, and I can talk you through what to do next. His phone number followed the post. Hey, is it just me, or is that number familiar? Janine asked. Bloody hell, Bree muttered. RH Paranormal. Richard Holt! I suppose that's the second person he claims he tried to help. There were no more posts in the thread. Janine rubbed at the goosebumps on her arms. What do we do now? She asked. Keep looking. Bree was already back on Google, searching for ghost camera and death camera. Janine glanced back at the pictures laid out on the table and felt queasy. The people in the forum had only taken a couple of shots. She'd taken 8. She stood up and stretched her shoulders, trying to look nonchalant. Actually, it's past dinner. I don't know about you, but I can't think with an empty stomach. How about I get some food, while you keep on there? Bree shot her a smile. Sounds good. Anything you want? Whatever you have, babe. I'm not fussy. Janine started rifling through her cupboards. She grabbed at a tin of tuna, intending to make tuna sandwiches, then hesitated. What if this is my last meal? Do I really want it to be tuna on toast? She tossed the fish back onto the shelf and picked out a packet of nachos and a tub of salsa. She dumped them both in a bowl, poured the remains of a packet of shredded cheese on top, and put it in the microwave. Bree was muttering to herself again, which meant she'd found something good. Janine peered at the computer screen, but it was too far away to read. She turned back to her task and grabbed a tub of sour cream out of the fridge. She was peeling away the seal when an invisible hand grabbed her arm. The touch burnt like 1,000 ice-cold needles being pressed into her skin, constricting the flesh and muscles, and sending jolts down into her elbow and up into her shoulder. Janine screamed and dropped the sour cream, which splattered over the tiled floor and her jeans, but she hardly noticed. The hand hadn't let go, and every second it held on, the pain increased. She jerked back and smacked her free hand at where the invisible wrist should be, but she touched only air. The grip tightened, and the ice spread through her body, rushing up her arm and into her chest. She threw herself back, trying to find relief. Eyes squeezed shut, she screamed. Then, as abruptly as it had grabbed her, the invisible hand let go. She found herself on her back, lying in the spilled sour cream. Bree was yelling her name and shaking her shoulders. Janine felt sick, but she doubted she had enough in her stomach to bring up. So she pulled herself to her knees. A headache, the kind she got when she tried to eat ice, nodded her head.
Jenny?
Bree's voice was unsteady.
Talk to me, Jenny. What happened? What can I do?
Janine rubbed her hand over the aching skin. A bruise was forming, shaped like a palm and fingers. Bree looked down and let out her breath in a hiss. She hooked one arm under Janine's shoulders and pulled her up.
Come on, we're getting in the car.
Huh?
I found something that might help, but we can't do it here. Hang on, I'll get the camera.
Janine hovered in the hallway, waiting for Bree. The hairs on her arms were raised and she had goosebumps down her back. The house felt suddenly ice cold. She let her eyes rove over the furniture, the fixtures and the photos she'd hung in the hallway. They felt alien, as though a stranger had come in the night and replaced everything with imitations. It was surreal. She rocked onto the balls of her feet and wrapped her arms around her chest, panting. Bree reappeared, holding not just the camera but also a slip of paper. One look at her face told Janine she'd made a decision. Bree's panic from before was gone, replaced by sheer determination.
Into the car, quickly, she said, ushering Janine to the door. We're going for a drive.
The rain was coming down in thick sheets, flattening Janine's hair and sending a trickle crawling down the small of her back. They ran for the car, feet slapping on the cooling pavement, Janine's breath coming in short, hard bursts. Bree pulled open the passenger door and practically threw Janine in, then slid around the front and into the driver's seat. She started the car, set the heat to high, and switched on the radio, turning up the volume until it was loud enough to drown out the drum of the rain.
Where are we going?
Janine asked as the car split away from the curb. To see the jackass.
Janine frowned. We're going to Travis?
Bree snorted in laughter. The other jackass, babe. The one who's going to help us whether he wants to or not.
Richard Holt?
Janine shook her head. It felt fuzzy, as if someone had stuffed it full of cotton candy.
I don't understand.
I found a blog that was talking about ghost cameras. This woman has a theory that you can talk to the ghosts to find out what they want. EMF tools, sensitive audio devices, whatever you can use to pick up their voices. She thinks some of the ghosts will help us if we can just communicate with them.
Janine glanced at the bruise on her arm. It had turned a dark mottled blue. If that was how they communicated, she wasn't sure she wanted more of it.
Has she ever tried it? Bree's laugh was shorter and harsher than before. Nope, it's the best I could find, though. She handed the slip of paper to Janine. I wrote his address down. Can you put it in the GPS?
Janine's hands were shaking so badly that the task took her several minutes. She could feel Bree watching her and was grateful she didn't say anything.
The rain had only gotten worse by the time they reached Richard's home on the outskirts of the suburbs. It looked a lot like its owner. Tall, meticulously neat, and very dull.
Bree parked on the street and opened her door, but Janine hesitated.
Are you sure we should do this?
Bree closed her door. You don't think we should?
He wasn't very happy to see us last time, even if he has equipment to hear ghosts. He may not let us use it.
I'll convince him.
Janine hazarded a smile. You're not going to threaten him with your tape gun, are you?
Bree laughed and got out of the car.
Chapter 6. Richard opened the door, then closed it immediately. Janine had just enough time to see he was wearing a heavy red dressing gown. His professorish streak ran deep, apparently, and that his face blenched as soon as he saw them.
Come on! Bree yelled, banging on the door as the rain plastered her hair across her forehead. Please talk to us for a minute. It's raining. You can't just leave us out here.
He certainly can, Janine thought, wondering how long Bree would persist in the face of a locked door. But after a minute, Richard relented and opened the door with a heavy sigh. He didn't look happy, but he carried himself as professionally as he could in an oversized maroon dressing gown. He gestured for them to come into the foyer and said, "Wait here," then disappeared into a side room. Janine gazed around the foyer. It was filled with expensive-looking decorations. She and Bree stood on a plush rug. To their left was a dark wooden stand, and large paintings hung on the wall. The paintings seemed wrong somehow, and Janine approached the nearest one for a closer look. It showed a 19th-century family picnicking beside a scenic river. The man and woman leaned against the trees to their backs, while the boy was on his stomach, gazing into the river. After a second, Janine realized what was wrong. The people were dead. Gaunt and gray, they stared, slack-jawed, into the distance with empty eyes. It was as though the artist had taken three bodies from the morgue, dressed them in luxurious clothes, and arranged them into casual positions before laying out a rich feast of fruit, breads, and wine as a twisted joke. Janine jumped as the door behind her opened. Richard returned, carrying two towels. He handed one to Bree and the other to Janine.
I'm not getting rid of you, am I?
He asked, resignation thick in his voice.
I don't blame you, but really, truly, there's nothing I can do.
Don't be so sure of that.
Bree toweled her hair aggressively, making it spike up at odd angles. She paced about the room, glancing at the paintings on the wall. I found something that might work. Do you have audio equipment that's sensitive enough to pick up ghosts' voices?
Richard snorted. Of course I do. But if you're hoping to talk to the spirits, I'm afraid that won't work. I already tried that with my last client. Ghosts don't think like us. I expect you're hoping to reason with them, but they're far too... what's the word? Instinctual for that.
Bree raised her eyebrows questioningly. That was all the prompting Richard needed.
Ghosts are no longer human. You have to remember that, above everything else. The best way I can explain is that they're like imprints of emotion. If someone is murdered, dies tragically, or goes insane and kills themselves, the emotions and thoughts experienced immediately before death will be what makes up the ghost. Once they're created, they have no ability to learn or grow. A man who finds his wife has cheated on him kills her, then turns a gun on himself will only ever be able to feel those last few strong emotions. wild rage, resentment against women, especially women who resemble his wife, and self-loathing. He will never be able to let it go, not until his energy becomes too weak to sustain him, and he dissipates.
You lost me,
Bree said as she leaned against the wall. Richard shrugged and put his hands in his pockets.
Ghosts are essentially energy. It's the same sort of energy that makes us alive compared to, say, a rock. If a human experienced a significantly strong emotion as they died, it's often enough to imprint their energy on the spectral plane. However, it will slowly dissolve. Depending on the strength of the initial energy imprint and how much energy it can find to consume, the ghost may last for a few years or a few decades. Very rarely do they last more than a few hundred years. This is why we don't have any caveman ghosts. They simply dissolved over time.
Janine nodded, thinking about the ghosts in the photos. A few looked as though they'd come from the 20s or 30s, but otherwise they were dressed in modern clothes.
So you're saying they won't want to talk?
Bree asked.
Exactly. Their energy. Pure, raw, instinctive emotion. Their past reason.
Janine could see Bree chewing that over. Their gazes met for a second, then Bree frowned and grabbed Richard's elbow.
Can we talk? Let's talk. Come on.
She ushered him through the door to their left as Janine watched in stunned silence. She could hear their voices. Bree talking animatedly, almost frantically, and Richard's subdued responses. But she couldn't make out any words. She turned back to the paintings as she waited. The woman by the river had turned to face the painter, her lips peeled back to show rotting teeth. Janine started, took a step back, then leaned forward again for a better look.
Hadn't she been gazing into the distance before?
Janine quickly looked at the other paintings. The one to the right showed two puppies lying on the ground, eyes closed. They looked as though they were sleeping. Had they not been juxtaposed with the corpse picnickers, Janine wouldn't have looked twice. She leaned closer, and a shudder of disgust rolled through her stomach as she saw the small cluster of flies gathered about the puppy's eyes. The door behind her opened, and Bree and Richard came back into the room. Bree looked relieved. Richard seemed to be trying hard to keep emotion from showing. Janine was glad for a distraction from the morbid images.
Hey, she said to Richard, trying to lighten the mood. Do all ghost investigators own horrible paintings?
Huh?
He blinked at her, as though she'd disturbed him from an important train of thought.
You don't like them?
Maybe he doesn't see anything wrong with them, Janine thought, as Richard led them out of the foyer and into a dining room. Maybe he thinks they're ironic or high art or something. The dining room was decorated in luxurious style similar to the foyer. A large mahogany dining table, a modern kitchen, and several large sculptures adorned the room. The sculpture nearest Janine featured a mostly nude woman with a snake wrapped around her torso. She was caressing the serpent lovingly, even though its fangs were embedded in her neck.
Wow,
Bree said, turning in a circle to admire the room.
If ghost hunting is this lucrative, maybe I should change my career.
Richard laughed.
Actually, I started out in the stock market. I got lucky, and now my investments pay the bills. Paranormal investigating was initially a hobby, but now that I can afford to, I do it full time.
He began pulling boxes out of cabinets on the wall.
This will just take a minute to set up. Would it bother you if I asked about the camera?
Bree was instantly defensive.
What about it?
I take it you haven't destroyed it yet.
Richard said with a heavy sigh. He pulled a large, old-looking machine out of one box and placed it on the table, then glanced at the purse Bree had tossed into the corner of the room.
Do you have it with you right now?
Maybe.
Go and put it in my study, second door to the left in the foyer. It's better not to have the camera anywhere near this.
Bree picked her handbag up, but otherwise didn't move.
Why's that?
Remember what I said about the camera being like water that connects the paper?
Richard was plugging cords into the machine.
It's a channel for hundreds, possibly thousands of ghosts. Having it in the same room would be like trying to hear a whisper in a rock concert. Better to put it away, so that you can only hear the ghosts that are fixated on you.
Fixated?
The ones you photographed.
Richard turned on his machine, and it let out a high-pitched whine that subsided when he adjusted some knobs.
They've seen you, and now they're following you. There are plenty of other ghosts around, but they don't know you're there until you take a picture of them. Or until...
He stopped, coughed, then busied himself adjusting various sliders. Until what?
Janine leaned forward. Never mind, it's nothing to concern yourself with.
Oh no, I think it is, Bree said. How will the others be able to see us?
Let it drop.
No.
Richard let a sigh out between his teeth and frowned at her.
As this curse, I suppose you might call it, as your curse progresses, you'll move closer and closer to their dimension, until they're able to see you even without the camera.
Janine swallowed. Is that bad?
We'll take care of it before it reaches that stage, Richard said. If this doesn't work, you can take a few sleeping pills, so you won't be able to feel them or see them.
He broke off and stared into space. Something in his tone sounded like grief. Janine took a stab in the dark. That last girl, Becca, she didn't take any sleeping pills, did she?
Richard jolted at the mention of the girl's name.
His face scrunched up, as though he were trying to repress memories.
No, she didn't. I was with her at the end. There.
He took a gulp of air and moved to get another box out of the cupboard.
There wasn't anything I could do to help. I tried. I'd made promises, but she still... I hope you understand that it has been very hard to help you ladies. After Rebecca, well, it's a situation I've explicitly tried to avoid.
He paused, then turned to Bree.
Please, put the camera in the study.
Bree chewed her lip for a second. Then she nodded, tossed her bag over her shoulder, and marched into the foyer. Janine sat on one of the kitchen chairs to wait, her towel draped over her lap and her damp hair sticking to her neck. Can I ask you something? Janine leaned forward and lowered her voice. After everything you went through with Becca, what did Bree say to change your mind? She didn't threaten you or anything, did she?
Richard let his face relax into a wry smile.
Unless emotional blackmailing counts, no.
What then? Why didn't she want me to hear?
He sighed and ran a hand through his hair.
She said she couldn't stand knowing she'd encouraged you to take more pictures. She said she wanted to try anything, no matter how slim the chance, to buy you some time. She said she didn't want to die with your blood on her hands.
Janine groaned. Stupid, sweet Bree. If she had any sense, she would have been spending her last days with Travis. This isn't going to work, is it? She asked Richard. He considered his answer carefully before speaking.
It's not impossible.
But you don't think it will work?
No.
He looked 10 years older than he had that afternoon.
No, I don't believe it will.
The door swung open and slammed against the wall as Bree re-entered. She was toweling at her hair, which was wet again. Apparently, she didn't trust Richard enough to leave the camera in his study. Did I miss anything?
We're just about ready now.
Richard plugged in the last cable, which was connected to a microphone.
I built this device myself nearly a decade ago. Under normal circumstances, it's not strong enough to pick up much more than faint sounds, but, well, I don't expect that will be a problem tonight.
Sweat beating on his forehead, he glanced at Janine and Bree.
Speak clearly when you ask questions, and try not to interrupt them when they're talking. That seems to make them angry. And keep your voice quiet. They don't have any trouble hearing whispers.
He pressed a button and the machine hummed into life. Janine and Bree scraped their chairs closer together. In the silence, Janine could hear the rain roaring through the trees' leaves and drumming on the windows. The machine was making a faint, almost inaudible whirring. Then a third noise became audible, a woman's voice speaking rapidly.
You don't understand! You do not understand! You don't understand!
Richard motioned for the friends to stay quiet. Then he leaned close to the microphone.
My name is Richard Holt. Can you hear me?
The voice abruptly fell silent. Janine counted the seconds. 1, 2, 3, 4. Then the woman spoke again.
You don't understand!
Tell me what I don't understand.
Richard said, keeping his voice slow, clear, and calm.
Who are you? I don't want to talk to you. I want the girl!
The voice was winding up, becoming higher and tighter. Janine could hear a rumble in the background, but couldn't make out what it was.
I am her friend, Richard said. She would like to know why you follow her.
You don't understand.
Explain it to me, then.
Give her to me.
The voice was stronger, harsher, and demanding. Richard paused for a second before replying.
She would like to end this business with your realm. She wishes to be left alone.
Silence for a second. Then the voice broke out into something resembling laughter. It was the single worst sound Janine had ever heard. A twisted mockery of the real thing.
The steady ha 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 was completely devoid of joy, but filled with cold intent. The woman kept making that same sound, like a broken record, and the rumbling noise in the background grew in volume, becoming clearer. Other voices, dozens, maybe hundreds of them, added their empty laughter and cold voices to hers, until it grew into a cacophony of noise.
"She will never be alone again. She is ours. Give her to us. We want her. Cool her flesh. Break her bones. Give her to us."
Richard pressed his finger to his lips, urging Janine to stay silent. Bree hooked one trembling arm around Janine's shoulders and pulled her closer. The lights around them flickered, and the bulb directly above the machine burst in a shower of hissing sparks. Janine shrieked, and as if she'd flicked a switch, the machine was silent again. They froze, barely breathing, as they waited to see if the machine was still working.
"Give her to me,"
the woman hissed, and Janine jumped. The voice was no longer anxious but hungry.
"Give her to me and I will take such good care of her. Such good care, like one of my own babies. See how much I loved them? My neighbors didn't understand my love. They didn't understand it all. But you will, darling, and I will free you too."
Richard was trembling, but he kept his voice composed.
"She isn't yours to take. She belongs here among the living."
The ghost shriek ripped out of the machine, swallowing the room in the wailing noise. Janine clamped her hands over her ears and squinted as two more lights blew out in a burst of sparks. In the flickering, struggling light cast by the remaining bulbs, she saw a tall, gaunt woman standing behind Richard. Her hair framed a wild halo about her head. Outstretched arms ended in long, cruel nails, and she had blood smeared up to her elbows. Her eyes locked onto Janine, and she crowed in a voice that became deeper and fiercer.
"Come, my darling, I will take such good care of you. They didn't understand, but you will, my darling. I will make you understand."
Janine shrieked and kicked away from the table. She landed on her back and scrambled away from the nails of the wild-eyed woman. Her back hit something and she looked up to see the statue of the woman with a snake biting her neck. The snake was alive, twitching and pulsing as it tightened its grip and dug its fangs deeper. Blood, bright and hot, dribbled out of the wound and dripped onto Janine's shoulder. She shied away and covered her head, frightened to look, afraid to close her eyes, feeling as if her heart might give out at any second.
"Jen!"
Bree shook her shoulders. "What's wrong?" Janine opened her eyes. She could still hear the ghosts, but the woman was gone. She looked into Bree's eyes and saw the confusion and fear swimming there. Bree hadn't seen the ghost. Bree hadn't seen the statue move. "Is it all in my head?"
"Up,"
Richard said briskly, looking pale as he gripped Janine's arm and pulled her to her feet. Bree wrapped her arms around Janine's shoulders. "What's happening to her?"
"She can see them,"
Richard said, his mouth a thin line, his eyes huge with fear.
"I hadn't expected her to be this far along, or I would never have agreed to."
The voices became louder in Janine's head, drowning out Richard and Bree, and making her ears buzz.
"Find her! Find her! Strip her flesh! Shut out her light!"
The bulbs fizzled again, and in the flickering shadows the ghost became visible. Six nondescript shapes appeared near the far wall, then two vanished, only to be replaced by another dozen on the next light flicker. The woman was no longer looking at Janine, but was turning about the room, staring blindly, searching for her. Richard turned to face the room while Bree huddled against Janine. He raised his voice above the roar of the rain and the screaming voices.
"Leave her be!"
he yelled, arms outstretched.
"She is not yours! She does not belong with you! You can take the camera, but you cannot have her!"
The clearest ghost, the woman, turned in response to Richard's voice and opened her mouth to hiss at him. The lower jaw distended far past where it should have, and blood pooled over her tongue and dripped down her lips.
"Leave her!"
Richard yelled a final time, and the ghost launched herself at him. Chapter 7. Janine felt her heart skip a beat as the ghost and Richard made contact. The impact forced Richard against the wall, and he let out a gasp of shock and pain as the ghost sought his neck with her teeth. He struggled as lightning flashed through the curtained window. In that second of intense light, Janine saw that the room was full of the otherworldly beings. Tall, thin, and decaying, they crowded around Richard, their mouths open in hungry howls. A drop of blood hit Janine's cheek, and she muffled a shriek.
This is happening because I'm here, she realized. I'm attracting them. I'm letting them touch him.
She grabbed Bree's arm and began dragging her towards the door. Bree was in shock, staring at Richard, her mouth open. She wasn't moving, and Janine had no choice but to let her go and bolt for the exit alone. Her legs didn't want to carry her. She got through the door to the foyer and stumbled, catching herself on the table. The faint light was just sufficient for her to see the paintings, which had changed again. The puppies could no longer be mistaken as asleep. Their flesh sagged off their skeletons, splitting in places to allow maggots and bone to peek through. Their empty eye sockets stared at each other. The picnicking family had also moved. The mother and father were crouched over their child, holding his head under the stream's flow, their mouths splitting open into twisted smiles.
No,
Janine whispered. As she backed away from them, the puppies raised their heads to look at her, slivers of mangy skin falling off their skulls. A hand clapped Janine's shoulder. She spun, nearly slipping on the marble floor, to find Bree panting behind her.
What's happening? She gasped, her eyes bulging. I need to get out of here.
Janine turned towards the front door.
Can I borrow your car?
Borrow? I'll drive you. Bree grabbed her hand and ran with her. Lightning flashed, and suddenly, the wild-haired woman blocked their path. Bree didn't, or couldn't, see the specter, and she kept running. Janine yanked on her friend's arm to pull her back, and managed to twist them out of the way just before impact. She hadn't anticipated how quickly the ghost would move. It flickered to the side, then was on top of her before she could dodge. Long fingernails dug into Janine's forearm, and she screamed. Bree turned, shocked, and Janine threw her weight at her, pushing them both out the door. The ghost held her grip and opened her maw to expose rows of teeth, which she plunged into Janine's arm. Janine felt the blinding, icy pain. Then they were stumbling out of the house and tripping down the front steps to land in a puddle of water on the lawn. Lightning flashed, and the ghost was gone.
Car!
Janine gasped, clawing her way to her feet. Bree grabbed her elbow and ran her through the pounding rain to her Mini. She threw Janine into the passenger seat, then climbed into the driver's side and slammed her door. Janine looked out her window. Lightning crackled, and she could see the ghost through the thick sheets of rain, still on the porch, crouched on all fours like an animal. It was searching for them, its teeth exposed in a snarl.
What the hell? Bree gasped, fumbling to get her key into the ignition. What the hell happened there?
Janine opened her mouth, but didn't answer. The ghost's eyes had locked onto their car, and it was scuttling towards them like a malformed insectile abomination.
Drive!
She hissed, watching the ghost race towards them. Bree turned the key in the ignition, but the engine stalled. The ghost hit the vehicle like a charging bull. The car rocked wildly, and Janine gripped her armrest while Bree swore. The woman reared up to press her hands and face against the window on Janine's side, opening her mouth in a silent scream as her empty eyes bored into Janine. Bree turned the key again, and this time the car roared to life. She floored the accelerator, skidding down the lane and kicking up spray as the tires shot through puddles. Janine glanced into the rearview mirror and saw the woman scuttling after them, but losing ground. She closed her eyes and tried to slow her breathing.
What was that?
Bree asked as they rocketed down the road, narrowly missing parked cars.
Can you see them?
Yeah. Janine wanted to explain more, but she felt drained. Her arm ached. She glanced at it, and nausea washed through her. The spirit's teeth had broken the skin, and hot red blood was dripping off her elbow. Bree looked at the blood and exhaled through her nose. I'm getting you to a hospital. Janine leaned back in her seat and swallowed, trying to clear her head.
Do you have your phone?
Yeah, in my bag. Janine reached down with her good hand and fished out the phone. She dialed the emergency hotline, gave them Richard's address, and said, Send an ambulance, then hung up. She wished she could do more, but going back would only make the situation worse. She fervently hoped the ghost had disappeared once she was away from his house. The rain wasn't easing. They passed a few people hurrying through the storm, some struggling to keep umbrellas the right way up, others just making a dash for their destination. The clouds were thick enough that the street lamps had turned on, but their light didn't extend far through the downpour. Janine turned to look out the window. Her vision was blurry, and maybe she really was hallucinating, but they seemed to be passing strange shapes.
Bree?
Yeah, babe.
Can you pull over a minute?
Bree did as requested and parked the car by the side of the road. They were still in a residential area, where tidy suburban houses lined the street. A man was rushing through the rain, a suitcase in one hand, holding his business jacket over his head with the other. Calmly walking past him was a ghost.
Did you see that?
Janine pointed at the spirit. Bree squinted through the window.
The man?
No, behind him.
The ghost had stopped and turned to look at Bree's parked car. He began walking towards them, lengthening his strides as he got closer. He had more definition than the ghost in Richard's home.
Keep driving,
Janine whispered. The man broke into a jog and his face twisted in rage. Another ghost came up from under the awning of the house across the street. A third, an elderly man, came from the opposite direction.
Drive!
Bree pushed the car into gear and sped down the road. A teen's ghost ran to block their path and the car screeched past him just in time.
Shoot,
Janine whispered, closing her eyes. She didn't know what would have happened if the ghost had been in the way of the car. She didn't want to know. They seemed to interact with physical objects like regular humans when they were around her. Sickness welled up inside her, and she clamped a hand over her mouth as she retched.
There's a bag in the back if you need it, Bree offered.
Hang on, we're almost there. A voice in the back of Janine's head objected to the idea of hospital, but she couldn't think why. A pounding headache had started, and her stomach muscles were convulsing from chills.
Can we have the heater up?
She asked through numb lips. Bree flicked the switch up as high as it would go, but the hot air did nothing to warm Janine. Her vision swam as Bree skidded into the parking lot of the hospital, and her anxious feelings were suddenly validated. What place has a greater concentration of suffering and death than a hospital? As the car turned towards the emergency entrance, Janine reached out her good hand to grasp Bree's wrist and stop her.
No, 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 no.
Ghosts wandered aimlessly through the car park, stopping to stare at Janine as the car passed. She looked at the glass doors of the hospital and saw a concentration of them inside, turning to watch her with blank eyes as she neared.
No, Bree, we have to get out of here.
What? Bree's eyes were wide with fear and anxiety.
Jenny, you need help.
They're everywhere. She forced the words through her rapidly closing throat.
They're coming for me.
Damn it, Bree muttered.
You better not be hallucinating, babe.
She put the car into gear and began to turn as an orderly exited the hospital's front doors. The open doors released a spectral tide. Dozens upon dozens of spirits poured through the opening as soon as it was wide enough, weaving around the oblivious orderly and racing for the car.
Go!
Janine screamed, her voice high and tight. Bree put her foot on the accelerator and the car skidded, wheels spinning. Janine saw shapes falling and looked up in horror. Ghosts were jumping from the upper levels of the hospital, exiting through open windows and leaping off the roof. They swarmed towards the car and dozens of hands pressed against the windows and bonnet. Janine screamed and covered her face with her hands as the pressure began to tip the car. Bree felt it too, and floored the accelerator. The car jerked sharply as the ghost blocked their exit. Janine instinctively pulled her feet off the ground as the spirits disappeared under the car, and immediately she wished she hadn't. Nausea and rigors washed over her. The car broke through the wall of ghosts and shot out of the hospital parking lot, attracting stares from the patients getting into their cars and prompting a wave of ghosts to clamor over each other in single-minded pursuit.
Jenny! Jenny, can you hear me?
Bree's hand was on Janine's shoulder, shaking her, trying to wake her from her stupor. Janine forced her eyes open to look at her friend. Bree's face was as white as a sheet, and her eyes were round with terror.
Babe, I need you to help me help you. What do you need? Where do you want to go? Do you want to try another hospital?
No, Janine managed.
No hospitals. Go somewhere. No people. Try the mountains.
The mountains?
No ghosts there, Janine said. I hope.
Bree obediently turned the car towards the forest to the north. The mountains were sparsely populated, and only a few roads ran through them, connecting the two cities on either side. Janine hoped a smaller population would mean a lower number of ghosts. She closed her eyes and tried to brace against the bumps and turns of the car. She was shivering uncontrollably. Her vision was blurred, and the pounding in her head had been replaced with a strange emptiness, as though the contents had been sucked out.
You don't look good, Bree said,
glancing at Janine out of the corner of her eye.
I'm fine, Janine muttered.
Sweat poured down her face and soaked her already wet clothes. Her legs had started twitching.
Just need some more quiet rest.
Janine lost consciousness shortly after they left the town. One moment, she was squinting, checking that the road was clear. The next, Bree was shaking her awake. For a second, the shaking felt exactly the same as driving over the ghosts. The car had bounced across them as if they were real people. Did they feel pain? Fear? Is it possible to kill a ghost? Then Bree's voice, panicked and desperate, filtered through the fog.
Babe, please, wake up! You've got to stay with me! Come on, Jenny, wake up! Janine tried to say, "I'm awake," but it came out as a mumble. She heard a strange whistling noise, and a second later, she realized Bree was hyperventilating.
"I should take you back," Bree muttered. "You're sick. You need a doctor."
"No,